sitting at a desk all day is really bad for your heart and your brain. And what we say is anything good for your heart, it's good for the brain.
Welcome to the topic. This is your host, Kathleen Liberty. I'm the Director of Public Health of the Town of Franklin, and we have a very special guest with us today to talk about Alzheimer's and dementia-related disorders. I'd like to welcome Tammy. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Kathleen, for having me. This is certainly a topic near and dear to my heart. My name is Tammy Pozzericchi. I work for a company called Clear Guidance. We're a group of expert care managers specializing in all kinds of cognitive disorders, disabilities, mental health issues. I'm a dementia specialist, and I'm also a dementia educator. So I work a lot with families and healthcare professionals and individuals.
Well, that's wonderful. That's a big job, Tammy. The reason I invited you here today is the public health nurse and I are going to be working on a healthy brain initiative this year. And in researching this particular initiative through the CDC and the Alzheimer's Association, it all reflects on Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And I thought we would start by separating the two and defining each one, because even myself, I get confused a little. When do I use the word Alzheimer's? When do I use the word dementia? And I know there's several different types of dementia. So I don't know if you want to just start with what is Alzheimer's, and then we'll move into what is dementia.
Okay, so to explain it in the easiest way, dementia, when we hear the term dementia, it's not a diagnosis. Dementia is in a set of symptoms. So people acquire dementia because they're displaying certain symptoms like memory loss, confusion, disorientation, and other things. We hear Alzheimer's. And when you said related disorders, there's hundreds of major neurocognitive disorders that cause dementia. So we hear Alzheimer's because it is the most prevalent, and it's the one that they have the most statistics for. And so that's the first type we talk about. There's actually three different forms of Alzheimer's, but let me get into the other neurocognitive disorders. The second most common is vascular dementia. And most of these diseases that I'm going to mention, they come from genetic makeup, lifestyle, environmental issues. Alzheimer's does have specific genetic components, and it's also proteins that attack the brain cells. And I'm not going to get too scientific, but vascular is simply a caused by medical issues the person has, like vascular disease, anything with lacking blood flow to the brain. Sometimes they call the, they also have a mixed dementia, which means they have components of Alzheimer's and vascular. We're seeing that more often. The third most common is Lewy body dementia. Lewy body dementia is the disease that Robin Williams had, the actor Robin Williams. That is a neurocognitive disorder that affects cognitive and then physical, neuromuscular. It's actually related to Parkinson's disease. And Parkinson's disease is a very neuromuscular movement disorder, but it has a component of dementia. Not everybody with Parkinson's develops dementia, but 85% of those with Parkinson's will. And then the fourth type is frontotemporal dementia that affects the frontal and temporal lobes of the brain. And where the atrophy happens is where our social graces are, our ability to be socially appropriate. There are definite mood and personality disorder associated with frontotemporal. When I say frontotemporal, we call it FTD for short, but that is an umbrella term for a lot of different diseases that fall under frontotemporal, like Pick's disease. One is called primary progressive aphasia. That's the one Bruce Willis has. And there are a couple of variants of frontotemporal. One is semantic variant, being it's affecting mostly the language skills. And then there's behavioral variant, which is causing an awful lot of behavioral symptoms, a lot of impulsivity, a lot of obsessive compulsive. So I find with the experience I've had is that FTD is the most difficult in the way of behavioral. And also, these diseases that I'm talking about, it's no longer an older adult's problem. This is affecting people in their 40s, 50s, 60s. And so that's the crisis here, is that we see a lot of early onset forms of cognitive disorder.
Right, and that's probably due to lifestyle, I would imagine, as
It's due to so many factors. I mean, one in the sense of young onset Alzheimer's disease, we're seeing a high number, of the baby boomers sort of coming to the age where they're more apt to develop it. Age is the number one risk, and we can't stop that. And when you mention lifestyle, that's a lot to do with it.
Yeah, and we'll get to that as well. What about a brain injury? Is that a symptom of dementia as well? Am I saying that right?
Well, brain injury is a risk.
Okay.
So there's also something called CTE that we've heard, football players, hockey players. That's a repetitive head injury, like concussions, because, and they're over and over again. That is a disease in itself, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, or it also increases the person's chances for developing other cognitive impairment.
And you mentioned Robin Williams. I didn't know that he had a type of dementia.
He actually had, like I said, Lewy body dementia, but Lewy body dementia disease is actually there's a high percentage of misdiagnosis.
Okay.
It's hard to diagnose. However, the average, let's say, 4 to 5 visits it takes for assessment and evaluation for them to pinpoint that it is Lewy body. So they'll often say it's looking like Alzheimer's. And then when the person develops a movement disorder, they're saying, oh no, wait a minute, it's probably Parkinson's. And the reality is it's most likely Lewy body dementia, but it takes them a while to get to that. So that's and with him, they did that. First Alzheimer's, second Parkinson's, and Lewy body dementia, the hallmark symptom is hallucinations. And he died by suicide. And you got to wonder,
Yeah,
what were the
absolutely.
symptoms that he was suffering from?
Yeah. Oh, that's awful. I didn't know that. So, what are some of the early warning signs? We didn't cover that in entirety, but for either or Alzheimer's or dementia.
So, for Alzheimer's, it's interesting because you can have two 80-year-old females diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and they're going to present completely differently. And the reason is there we have to consider all the medical issues they may have, how they've lived their life, what are the genetic components to it. But in general, when we're talking about symptoms that we want to watch for, I would say that anything that is affecting your daily life, such as memory loss, confusion to date and time, getting lost, this isn't your typical, oh, I forgot I had an appointment.
I was
There's
going to
oh
say
yeah,
that's scary.
there's misplacing something like your keys or your phone, and then we usually have the ability to retrace our steps. Oh, where was I just now where I might have left my phone? I mean, I've been, I have my glasses up here. Where are my glasses? You know, everybody has done some of those things. In normal aging, we do struggle maybe with name recall or word finding, reaction time, but dementia is not normal. So we have a diagnosis that physicians are now using called mild cognitive impairment or MCI. What that is saying is that individual has expressed symptoms of dementia, but there is no definitive diagnosis yet. So that person with mild cognitive impairment who is noticing symptoms and issues, maybe they're still working, maybe they're still driving, but they have some feelings that something's not right. Family might be picking up on some things. They're different in some way. And that's when the person needs to really take a workup, a series of tests to determine what's causing the mild cognitive impairment. And the reason is, and most people don't know this, is that when we are suffering with any one of these symptoms, it could be because of a treatable or reversible condition. Major neurocognitive disorders are not treatable. They're fatal and progressive. But I've had people who have experienced a significant deficiency in vitamin B12, and they have symptoms of dementia. Well, once they fix that depletion, the symptoms of dementia go away, much like we see in clinical depression in the older adult. It looks like dementia, but they have untreated clinical depression.
It could be as simple as a UTI,
A urinary tract
or
infection.
that's not, detected or treated, hearing loss as well. And Lyme disease can present as dementia now too, I believe.
It can have an effect on the brain as well.
And I'll tell you, after my insistence with my husband to get hearing aids because of you could present as dementia, you finally got them simply because of that fear. So I always appreciate that little tip that you gave in to me earlier. Now he can hear me too, so that's a bonus. So I was looking at the Healthy Brain Initiative toolkit, and there was a screening that a physician was doing with a patient. And it actually kind of scared me a little bit because they asked this patient to draw a clock that's 11 o'clock or 3 o'clock. And I got nervous personally saying, oh my God, can I do that? Is that a sign? Because I'm a baby boomer, right? So you start to worry. So this type of screening, I don't know if all primary care physicians do this when a patient reaches a certain age. But is this important to do to
I think so.
even if we
Yes.
did it at like the flu clinic, if we did some type of screening?
So screenings are they're good and they're not good, and it really depends on who is facilitating this test with that individual
Okay.
and in what type of environment and what time of day. So
Oh.
there's the mini mental state exam that most physicians are now doing. They can do a brief version of it, I guess, to get a baseline. Most people, the Medicare now is covering the cognitive testing for physicians, so they will get a baseline, and then say in a year they'll run it again. Well, in a year, is it the same time of day? Is it the same place? Is it the same facilitator? Are they having a bad day? Did they just get over COVID? I mean, there's so many variables to those specific tests. And the one you mentioned, which is the clock drawing, there are other tests. There's the MoCA. I don't know if you've heard of that, the
No.
Montreal Cognitive test that now I forget the full acronym, but it's another test. And so there's varied cognitive assessments that they can do. I mean, you can get certified. Like, I'm certified to facilitate the MoCA.
Okay.
And if the person has had no training, it's very variable, the results.
Okay.
So I look at it as just part of the big picture of a workup for that individual.
So in that, and if the baseline is there's a telltale sign there, and the primary care does it again at a different time in a different office, then the baseline means nothing. It's almost like starting over again each time they do it. If it's not
Well,
done, same.
that's purely my experience and opinion.
Okay.
There are probably people out there that would say that doesn't matter, but I truly believe it does. And I've had experience with a physician giving an individual a test, and then 3 months later, it was in a completely different environment, and someone else was doing it, and now the daughter gets told, oh, she's really progressed. When I'm like, I don't know that I agree with that.
Right. And that, yeah, baseline screening or a screening, it's not always a telltale sign, like you said, depending on the day itself and if we've been ill. So that's good. That's good to know. Because we were planning to do that at the flu clinics, but I think I just changed my mind.
I mean, it's good. I probably wouldn't do well. And some of the tests, honestly, like count backwards from 100 minus 7. So 7, serial 7. So it's like 193. And then I'm going, okay, need a calculator.
Yep, exactly. Please don't ask me to do that.
Know. And the remembering of words and stuff. But as I said, it's just a small part of what really needs to happen in a diagnostic workup.
It's so involved. It really is. So for our brain, our Healthy Brain Initiative, we're going to be talking to the community about a healthy life and how to change some of the people's lives in what, how do I say this? So examples of a healthy lifestyle, right? Physical activity, fighting high blood pressure, preventing tobacco and alcohol use, trying to prevent some type of the obesity. These are just some, not all of the risk factors that can cause Alzheimer's or dementia. And so can you just talk a little bit about that? Because I found it really interesting that these social determinants of health are a risk factor for this type of disease. And it amazed me actually when I researched more about this.
It's really all about how we live our life with diet. Mediterranean diet we've always heard is good. There's a new diet that's out. It's called the Mind Diet. It's a Mediterranean integrated development neuro neurodegenerative delay diet. So
Okay.
following that diet, like you said, the blood pressure, the cholesterol, the physical activity, sedentary, sitting at a desk all day is really bad for your heart and your brain. And what we say is anything good for your heart, it's good for the brain. But things like socialization, being with other people, learning things that are new, learning new skills, learning a language. What else can I mention? The obesity is what leads to diabetes, and diabetes is a direct has a direct impact in the development of Alzheimer's. So if we're not, the other thing you had said, social determinants. Well, I would love to go to Trader Joe's and buy everything organic so that we're not having hormones and pesticides and genetic modified foods. And but what's cheap? Those type of foods. Nowadays, nothing's cheap, but just,
It's true.
and it's mindfulness. If we can practice more mindfulness, meditation, yoga, just being mindful in the present, stress. Stress actually can come off looking like dementia symptoms.
Really?
Yes. Stress is something we all carry, and it is so bad for us, so very bad for us.
But if we do practice mindfulness, meditation, yoga, we start to reduce that stress level.
Yes.
That also causes high blood pressure and et cetera, et cetera. So we're all, I guess it's all connected.
It is.
But diabetics or diabetes, you said, is a direct correlation. How does that work?
There's something I learned called insulin resistance of the brain.
Oh, okay.
It's almost like they're treating it as a type 3 diabetes. The other risk factor is dental hygiene. They have related that.
Really?
They've connected that as well. So someone with very poor hygiene in there, I mean, that's a breeding ground for bacteria and plaque, and then that can be found in the brain. Things like periodontal disease or gum disease.
Wow. I mean, talk about being totally connected, 100%. Although I also read about education, healthcare access, physical environment, puts a person at risk for dementia as well. And I mean, I can kind of see the correlation, but I wouldn't have thought of that first.
Have you ever heard the term cognitive reserve?
No.
So that plays a role in the progression of the disease process. So if you have someone who is highly intellectual, highly educated, they can have a slower progression of the disease process because
Yeah.
of that reserve. People with a lower IQ, people with a low education level, it could progress quicker.
That's so interesting. Wow. I'm going to have so much fun doing more research about this. I'm writing down notes. So let's see here. Oh, yes. Now I know, and this is how I found you, that you do training for first responders on how to respond to somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia. Do you want to talk about why that's so important?
Sure. I do a 2-hour specialized dementia education program for first responders, and I've done it in many, many towns. And it's for fire, police, EMS. And the reason is because most people who have dementia are living in our community. And they are responding to those calls. The call that, they get in at 3 a.m. Someone came in and stole my money.
Yeah.
No, someone I'm not, I want to go home and they're not letting me go home. So how do they align and build rapport and understand that they may pull someone over for erratic driving and the person could be 60 years old? And the erratic driving could be a symptom of dementia, not intoxication. So it's important they understand how to identify the difference, and utilizing the best communication skills to reach that person, to reassure that person.
Right, because if you push back, if they say I'm on my way to Salisbury Beach and when someone says to them, no, you're not, you're in Franklin, you're driving erratically, that's not the way to respond to them. You're supposed to go with it, right?
Exactly. Yes. And I know that they've made videos online for people to just kind of watch how that might play out. Because, it's if you're accusatory, if you're commanding, and demanding, it doesn't get you anywhere, you know?
They'll just get more defensive and confused, I would
Yeah, it only
imagine.
escalates. So what I try to do with them is figure out the best way to de-escalate, and
Exactly.
not for psychiatric reasons, for dementia-related behavioral and psychological symptoms.
Now that's super important. Now, there's also a term that you hear often called sundowning.
Yes.
What is, can you explain that?
It is a phenomenon. We are there still. I mean, we attribute it to many different things, but it's essentially when the sun goes down or as it's going down, the symptoms of dementia heighten and become worse. And so it becomes real problematic for those caregivers caregiving for that individual. So if they're at home, it's, when's my husband coming home? And the husband may be deceased. You're not my husband. So things in the home can become unsafe. If they're in an institution, there are things in these communities that can help. And one of the things is they might just be fatigued and overtired. They've been up all day. Most of them don't get good sleep at night because the families are allowing them to sleep during the day. And dementia trying to reverse circadian rhythm, it becomes a problem at night. So that's a kind of an individual to individual sort of case that we look at, and we try to assist with what they're seeing is escalating during those sundowning hours. And as I ran owned and ran a day program for folks with dementia, like November, they push the clocks back.
Is that confusing, really?
It's horrible, when it was getting dark. Later, before their loved one would be picking them up. And then now it's dark at 4 p.m. When are we going home? And it's not for 2 hours. So it makes things difficult.
It really does. About 10 years ago, the term dementia-friendly community started coming out, started arising. Grants were available, and one of the things was having a caregiver day at the senior center where they can, do whatever they want to do, sit quietly, have a cup of coffee, or talk with others about what they're going through. I'm sure you're in support of that. That's just huge for caregivers because, from what I understand, it can be a really taxing job taking care of a loved one who may be ill like this.
I was involved with Bay Path Elder Services. I was on the committee to develop these dementia-friendly communities, and we have ingrained into we did Northborough, Marlborough, Hudson, Ashland, Hopkinton, and it was an effort to train everybody, town employees, senior centers, We did the first responders, and then I started the first, I don't know if you've heard of them, memory cafes.
Yes, I
So I
have.
started the first one in Massachusetts in 2011, and
Oh,
now there's hundreds of them. And as you were talking about a place to go for the caregiver and the loved one who has dementia, memory cafes are the perfect place because you leave the disease at the door, you go in, you see and meet other caregivers and other people with dementia, and you're just socializing. A lot of times they'll have entertainment, like music and refreshments. And I used to have, as these developed past the one I started, we used to have people that would go to all the different ones. So we'd try to structure it so that we call them cafe hoppers. You know, Monday
okay.
they go here, Tuesday they go there. And it's just a way to get out of the isolation.
That's what it's called, Memory Cafe. That's what we have at the Franklin Senior Center. The other thing too, when that all started, the dementia-friendly communities, I read about a restaurant where the staff were trained on how to treat and identify, I guess, really, a person who may have dementia and was having a hard time ordering or making a decision about ordering. And I thought that was really interesting too, because and so nice for the customers, because I'm sure anxiety kind of escalates in a situation like that. And as much as you want to keep your loved one in a probably a more normal, day-to-day activities and be able to go out to lunch or dinner, I think that would be super helpful and important. So if you know any information about that, where I could
So
send that to my establishments.
there was an organization started by a woman, Jennifer, and she owned a restaurant in Acton, and she called it Purple Table.
That was it, purple table. Yeah.
And last I knew, unfortunately, and this is all results of COVID. They actually sold the restaurant, and because she had a mom with early onset Alzheimer's disease, and I've had a lot of people reach out to me, how do I find out about Purple Table? And so it really would take an effort, someone to sort of spearhead a whole campaign of doing that again. If restaurants want a training for them and their staff, that would be something I could do.
Wow.
But it's tough. It's tough getting staff. It's tough getting staff to stay. The restaurant business is really hard, but it did make a difference when it was happening, for
I bet
sure.
it did. Yeah, I remember thinking how wonderful that was for families not to go into a restaurant already with anxiety, right? How it could go and But I thought that that was extra special. Something I'll consider, though. I'm always happy to have a challenge and, having a good rapport with my food establishments, especially some of the smaller ones. It might be nice to start a pilot program to bring that to light.
I think that would be awesome, Kathleen. I really do. You know, a
Yeah.
lot of people, what happens is with older adults, there's a lot of infantiling. You know, oh, honey, sweetie, what can I get you? And
We're
we
talking loud.
yes, and the restaurants, I can hardly, I there are restaurants that I won't go to because of the noise and also because of the music they play, and all of that just makes it miserable for a person with dementia.
Or person without.
Right? Exactly. I just don't go
Oh,
there.
yeah, exactly. So as we wind up, is there anything that else that you can tell us that we haven't covered here?
One of the things I would recommend is for any caregivers who are listening to connect with the Alzheimer's Association and They offer a lot of support and educational programs. Get yourselves in a support group, caregiver support group, and it takes a village. Caregivers think I can do this. It's my job. I made a promise. All of that has to go out the window, and we have to ask for help.
We do, because if they're not healthy and they don't take care of themselves, then they're no use to the person who their loved one who is ill. So I absolutely agree with that. So thank you so very much for this. This is a great way to kick off our Healthy Brain Initiative. And it was great seeing you again as well.
You too, Kathleen. And if
Thank
there's
you.
anything else, regarding the topic, let me know. This has been great. And I do hope a lot of people see it and understand they're not alone.
That's
There's
important.
so many people out there living this journey.
That's so true. Well, thank you again. And everyone who's listening, we'll see you again the next time on the topic.